Humanism is among the most pervasive and influential universal ideologies of the 20th century, at least in the Western world. Perhaps it was a recognition of that influence which prompted the Southern Baptist Convention in Los Angeles of this year to pass its Resolution 12, entitled On Secular Humanism. In that resolution, noting that the United States Supreme Court now lists secular humanism as a non-theistic religion, the resolution views it as playing an increasingly important role in American society, particularly with its tendency to rush in to fill the ethical vacuum being created by the trend away from theistic teaching in the public educational systems. Then, observing that most Southern Baptists are uninformed about secular humanism, the resolution encourages Baptists to become informed about the nature and inherent dangers of secular humanism and to voice opposition to its major tenets. It finally reasserts the convention's long-held position that, quote, God rather than man is the measure of value in the universe. Despite some ambiguity and a debatable assumption or two, the resolution is a reasonably constructive statement. It discriminately specifies its target as secular humanism, which narrows the scope of the resolution. But not all of today's religious attacks on humanism are so carefully structured. Humanism has become a favorite target of political conservatives and theological fundamentalists. In fact, a caricatured humanism often becomes an umbrella label under which some people castigate most anything they do not like in the contemporary world. Such an attack can be found in a recent widely read book by a prominent American pastor who pictures humanism, here without a qualifying adjective like secular, as a rival assaulting the Christian faith. In condemning humanism for not recognizing the depravity of man, he observes that, quote, although the Bible teaches that man is fallen and essentially evil, humanism argues for the essential goodness and progress of the human family. The writer goes on to argue that humanism is stealthy, clever, and convincing, and as such, it is the enduring enemy of the Lord's church. Well, here is a case of a loose usage of terms, a debatable theological position, and a distortion of contemporary humanism. This passage illustrates how theological imprecision, combined with a lack of acquaintance with the major humanistic literature, stands in the way of an objective and fair assessment of contemporary humanism. What is clear is that the Christian church must come to grips with humanism in our time. One of the services the Christian philosopher can render the church is to engage in a philosophical examination of and dialogue with alternative worldviews and ideologies that are a prominent option in a given generation. So today, as a philosopher of religion and a servant of the church, I want to examine Christianity and contemporary humanism. As one having been interested now for a number of years in contemporary humanism, and having read a wide range of humanist philosophy and writings, I want to state and then briefly defend seven major theses on this topic. Humanism permeates most areas of contemporary life and culture, including philosophy, literature, art, science, education, politics, and religion. Prominent and self-conscious humanists can be found in all intellectual disciplines and cultural spheres. But beyond the prominent advocates are vast numbers of people who live by humanist values, although they may not attach the humanist label to themselves. A fascinating feature of humanism, and a major factor in the differing evaluations of it, leads me to state my first major thesis, which is that humanism is a broad philosophy, one that takes varied forms, ranging from secular to religious, from theistic to atheistic. What is common to all the humanisms is their stress upon the value, potential, and responsibility of human beings in the world. But there are multiple variations upon that central theme. Confessing humanists can be found among atheists, agnostics, rationalists, idealists, empiricists, secularists, Marxists, Jews, Zen Buddhists, Christians, and people who hold other major organizing perspectives about life. So one cannot generalize inclusively about every minute facet of the different forms of humanism. Humanism clearly requires a qualifying adjective if it is to be critiqued by the Christian thinker. In fact, one can discern two major streams in the humanist tradition in history, which might be described as the naturalistic secular and the religious. Both are found at the root of Western humanisms in early Greek philosophy and life. Protagoras and Democritus would perhaps represent the more secular, naturalistic root, and Socrates the religious root. Much of the humanist tradition in Western history, in the Christian era, has been theistic, following the Socratic path infused with major Christian theological values. Medieval humanism, for example, surfaced in the 12th century classical scholars of ancient Greece and Rome, and then in the various 13th century forerunners of modern science, like Roger Bacon. Renaissance humanism was a vital ingredient in the collapse of the hierarchical medieval world and the birth of the modern era. While remaining rooted in theistic religion, Renaissance humanism revolted against the authority of the church, the otherworldliness of religion, and the repressive resistance to new knowledge and learning. Then in the 16th and 17th centuries, as the scientific method was rapidly refined and its results dramatically extended, it influenced humanism in the direction of a scientific humanism and deism. The result was that by the 19th century, the humanism of many rationalists and free thinkers took the form of the rejection of the church, of belief in God, and of anything other than belief in nature as a closed system within which human beings are destined to live this one earthly life. Both of these historic roots, the naturalistic secular and the religious, have converged to produce our various 20th century versions of humanism. Although there are many branches of humanism, it is true that an increasingly dominating form is secular, scientific, and naturalistic, some versions of which present a great challenge to the Christian faith. Today, there are numerous official humanistic organizations throughout the world that are dedicated to furthering humanist causes. The largest of these, the International Humanist and Ethical Union, founded in 1952, includes 33 humanist organizations in 23 countries of the world. But beyond the official organizations, prominent humanist advocates are sprinkled through every intellectual discipline in the 20th century. In philosophy, which has generally provided the theoretical rationale for humanism, there are thinkers like John Dewey, William James, Bertrand Russell, Sidney Hook, Morris Cohen, Jean-Paul Sartre, A.J. Ayer, Karl Popper, Felix Adler, Peter Strawson, and many, many more. Albert Einstein and Julian Huxley and Jacob Bronowski would represent prominent examples from the natural sciences. And humanistic psychology embraces such influential figures as Sigmund Freud, Erik Erikson, Erich Fromm, Abraham Maslow, and Carl Rogers. And among a raft of modern writers are the brilliant talents of people like Albert Camus, Samuel Beckett, Archibald MacLeish, and many, many more. But 20th century humanism also takes religious form. Humanist values have been advocated in Christian theology by a wide variety of thinkers. The secular theologians, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, Teilhard de Chardin, Jacques Maritain, and many other theologians. Then various policies and pronouncements of the World Council of Churches have reflected humanistic commitments. And not the least of the humanistic advocates has been a Roman Catholic Church that has rediscovered its own humanistic roots, so that today, without any hesitation, Roman Catholicism can refer to Christianity as a transcendent humanism, or a true humanism, or a universal humanism. Given this wide distribution of humanist influences and the stunning diversity of its specific forms, the Christian should make a substantial effort to be discriminating and sensitive to the differences among the humanisms, as well as to the common ground occupied by Christians and even the most secular of today's humanists. My analysis of a diversity of humanist writings leads me to state a second thesis. All humanisms share a broad common ground of commitment to certain important principles and human values, despite the differences between the particular expressions of humanism. Let me suggest some of these values that are easily discernible, whether one is reading a John Dewey, an A.J. Ayer, a Julian Huxley, a Jacques Maritain, or some other religious humanist. The heart of humanism is its emphasis upon the dignity and worth of human beings and the moral equivalence of individual persons. Humanists also stress the importance of this present life and of persons finding fulfillment in the here and now, and as much as possible in one's present generation. Such a conviction gives the humanist a sense of urgency in his efforts towards social justice, equality, the struggle for freedom, and for the fulfillment of individuals and the human race in the fruits of the good life. A third emphasis is on human responsibility. Humanists are not willing to be carried on the tides of fate. Humans, they believe, are history's chief actors and are responsible to determine the affairs of this world. Another element in the humanist credo is a belief in our human potential and in the possibility of responsible human beings influencing the future toward a better life for the human race. Now here we've got to be careful to understand the nature of this expectation about the future. Contrary to some of their critics, 20th century humanists, tempered by the harsh realities of the century, generally no longer hold to a naive 19th century optimism about the inevitable progress of the future or the perfectibility of the human race. They simply believe that the future is open and that potentially human beings can choose to become shapers of that future. Five, humanists also believe in the power of human reason to solve human problems in society and in relation to nature. Humanists value all forms of knowledge wherever found. And many humanists increasingly stress the instrumental value of science in addressing our human problems. Another characteristic is that humanists usually define the supreme goals of life and society in some version of the good and happiness of all the human family. That broad principle, in turn, becomes the basis for somewhat differing approaches to ethics and morality among the particular humanisms, religious and secular. Humanist 7 are passionately humanitarian in their concern for the good life and for social justice. They advocate community responsibility for eliminating evils such as hunger and violence, and for improving standards of health, education, housing, welfare, and anything else that affects the quality of human life. And finally, this moral centering on persons carries important implications for many areas of human life. For example, the humanist affirms cultural pluralism and resists the imposition of one behavioral pattern upon all people by any group within society. Humanists usually support religious and non-religious tolerance and advocate a sharp separation between church and state. Humanists also generally favor political democracy and a fair distribution of economic wealth. Let me make here one preliminary comment on these common characteristics I've suggested among various humanisms, including secular humanism. If I have been clear, then it is evident that many Christians would share a number of these commitments, and some Christians all of these commitments. If that is true, then there is obviously some broad common ground between Christianity and all humanisms, including the most radical secular humanisms. I'll come back to this point in a minute. Let me turn specifically to secular humanism, which so concerns many of our religious contemporaries. I would contend in my third thesis that the distinctive character of secular humanism is not its commitment to human values, but rather its naturalistic assumptions and worldview, either explicitly stated or tacitly assumed. In my judgment, most of the views of the secular humanists that are not acceptable to the Christian are rooted fundamentally in this explicit or tacit naturalism. Now let me elaborate that. All humanisms, secular humanisms, by definition, are anti-supernatural. They are self-consciously not under God or any other transcendent reality. They advocate human autonomy and the secularization of the historical process. Such anti-supernaturalism makes most secularists, I will contend, either explicit or tacit naturalists. The naturalist insists that nature is everything there is, a self-explanatory whole, and that human life should be lived autonomously without reference to anything outside of nature. Naturalistic humanism of this type can take two basic forms. We might call them metaphysical humanism and anthropocentric humanism. The metaphysical naturalist sets human life in a large cosmic framework and contends quite explicitly that nature is a self-originating and self-explanatory whole. On the other hand, anthropocentric naturalists, John Dewey being one example, simply focus on human life itself within the course of nature and have very little conscious metaphysical concern. However, I would argue that any conceptual justification for such a non-transcendental human autonomy at least presumes a metaphysical naturalism. So I would contend that all secular humanisms are, at a minimum, tacit naturalisms, and that all naturalisms are either explicit or tacit metaphysical naturalisms. Well, whether explicitly or tacitly metaphysical, all secular naturalistic humanists view humans as the fortuitous chance product of a blind evolutionary process. Humanity is not the result of a special creative act or even of some immanental purposive drive within the universe itself. Humans, oddly enough, are the center of humanist concern, but they have absolutely no special place in this vast cosmos in which humans live. Like other humanists, naturalistic humanists agree that humans are responsible for their own destiny, but with a difference. They adamantly hold that humanity is solely the master of its own fate. There are no transcendent or divine powers to which human beings can appeal for help or to which they are finally accountable. This view of humans as a chance emergent out of a blind evolutionary process has many implications. For example, the naturalistic humanist denies that there is any reality or core in a person that transcends the electrochemical processes of his psychosomatic structure. Consequently, there is no human immortality or transhistorical survival of any kind. Humans have no future outside themselves at all. This life is important simply because this life is all there is. Although naturalistic humanists place their own faith in humans, for the most part, they hold that humans are really morally neutral, contrary to the quote I earlier read from a critic, so that human beings are neither intrinsically good nor intrinsically bad. A human, for a naturalist, is simply an organismic phenomenon with all kinds of shaping forces inside and without. Some of these naturalists are very optimistic about our human future because they believe, as does Julian Huxley, that the next stage in evolution is not towards some higher species, but rather toward the psychosocial humanization of the human race. For the most part, however, this naturalistic faith and hope in our human future is tempered by a realism about our present human limitations. Further, naturalists place a heavier emphasis than do some other humanists upon human rationality and modern science as the only available tools for solving problems and shaping the future. Science, they hold, can potentially solve the problems of the natural world, the nature of the human self, of human society, ethics, and even religion. Our proper human concern for the naturalist is nature and history, not metaphysics. And so they argue that the use of critical intelligence can break the bondage of old religious mythologies and other illusions about our human situation. And so these secular humanists oppose all tyrannical ideologies that limit the use of human intelligence, or resist new truth, or impose a code of belief upon a whole society. In the matter of ethics, naturalistic humanists deny absolute moralities. Although there are different approaches to ethics among the naturalists, they all do agree that humans are on their own without any divine guidance whatsoever. The basic principle in most secular ethics is usually some interpretation of the greatest good for the greatest number of people. As A.J. Ayer has noted, on their behalf, no one has ever proved that the greatest happiness is the highest good. But then he observes it probably is not really necessary to do so. Beyond a group of broad social principles necessary to the survival of any stable society, the secularists advocate quite permissive attitudes about personal patterns of behavior within that larger set of standards. The naturalistic humanist view of religion is particularly important for Christians like ourselves. The explicit naturalisms contend that theism can no longer be maintained seriously in our kind of scientific world, simply from the standpoint of science and logical rationality. Many secular naturalists hold that the God hypothesis, so basic to most organized religions and structures, that this God hypothesis is not only untenable, but that it also produces many undesirable, in fact, destructive consequences in human society. These include, in their view, an otherworldliness that is unconcerned for this world and its improvement, a negative attitude about human nature, an uncharitable attitude toward non-Christians, a view of the inferiority of the female sex, and a resistance to the scientific method and non-religious types of knowledge. In the view of many sensitive critics, theism produces an irreparable split in the universe and prohibits progress in rationality, morality, and even in religion itself. Some secularists would like to replace historic theisms with some scientific form of naturalistic religion, while others would like to abolish religion altogether. Well, this secular naturalistic form of humanism that I have been outlining presents a formidable challenge to the Christian faith at a number of points. The question is, how should a Christian respond to this comprehensive, secular, humanist vision?